I've come here today voluntarily as a witness and as a whistleblower. Cambridge Analytica sought to identify mental vulnerabilities in voters and worked to exploit them by targeting information designed to activate some of the worst characteristics in people, such as neuroticism, paranoia, and racial biases. When I was at Cambridge Analytica, I was also made aware of the firm's black ops capacity. I have seen documents relating to instances where the firm sought to procure hacked material. Some of the targets of these special intelligence services are currently heads of state in various countries.
That's Christopher Wiley, former director of research at Cambridge Analytica and its London affiliate SCL Group. And today, he's known as the whistleblower. Wiley testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee on Wednesday amid reports that both the FBI and the Justice Department are investigating the now-defunct company accused of harvesting private data from 50 million Americans and potentially violating election laws. Tony Rahm is technology reporter for The Washington Post, and he was following Wednesday's hearing. Hi, Tony.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you for being with us. So tell us what was new in terms of what Christopher Wiley revealed in his testimony. I mean, who people were targeting, the language they were using to target people.
Well, the big thing that we learned yesterday from Christopher Wiley is that the Department of Justice and the FBI are talking to him and potentially taking a bigger look at Cambridge Analytica and its tactics during and before the 2016 election. But much of what lawmakers heard yesterday was a bit of a reminder as to the extent of this firm's activities. Things about how the firm was using Facebook data to create psychographic profiles of voters so that it could market messages to them, sometimes to sow racial division. Sometimes to keep folks from turning up to the polls. And Christopher Wiley came with a warning that lawmakers had to do something about it. They had to crack down on companies like Facebook that collect and sell access to that data to firms like Cambridge Analytica, and had to take a closer look at what the firm had been doing during the 2016 election.
There were also a number of exchanges about Russia, and I want to play you one with Senator Chris Coons, a Democrat of Delaware, to get your reaction.
Why do you think Cambridge Analytica was testing Putin's aggressive actions? And what threat would it pose to our 2018 elections if this entire data set, all the algorithms that go with it, are currently in the hands of Russian intelligence?
So I don't have a clear answer as to why the company was so engaged in testing Russian expansionism and the leadership of Vladimir Putin. That's a question better put to Steve Bannon. In terms of the dangers for not just American democracy, but other democracies around the world, this data is powerful, and if it's put into the wrong hands, it becomes a weapon.
Tony, your reaction to that?
There are lots of instances where there's some overlap between the work Cambridge Analytica was doing and Russia. One of the things that Wiley was alluding to was the fact that Alexander Kogan, a researcher who developed the app that Facebook or that Cambridge Analytica had used on Facebook, had traveled to St. Petersburg. His work was known in Russia. And so one of the fears there is that, either by choice or by force, Russia may have acquired some of the insights from Cambridge Analytica. They may have keylogged or hacked Kogan and others who had access to that data. It's unclear. There was a later exchange about the extent to which Russian trolls who sought to destabilize the U.S. election, whether they had access to some of that information. But Wiley told members of Congress that it was not clear to him that the Internet Research Agency had ever obtained that data. I think more than anything, though, it just shows us that there are so many unanswered questions here about the tactics that Cambridge Analytica employed and the extent to which this Facebook information may have been weaponized two or three steps removed from those who had it in the first place.
Tony Rahm is a technology policy reporter for The Washington Post. Thanks for joining us, Tony.
Thanks for having me.
Online platforms' terms and conditions present users with a false choice because using the internet is no longer a choice. Americans cannot opt out of the 21st century.
Whether or not you watch Christopher Wiley's testimony on Wednesday, you might feel the same. See, when you click agree on the dozens of sites you visit and subscribe to, you don't really know what it is you're agreeing to or whether or not you even have the option to decline. It's something that I noticed, especially over the past few weeks, as companies present new terms and service agreements to online users, but the new agreements aren't a result of Facebook's data breach. Natasha Tiku is a senior writer for Wired covering Silicon Valley.
you are part of the millions, probably billions of people that are getting these annoying emails right now. And the reason for it is an upcoming privacy law in Europe called the General Data Protection Regulation, or GDPR for short. So it's a set of privacy laws that will go into effect on May 25th, and it requires companies to have a legal basis for collecting personal information. And that means your name, address, location data. And one of the bases that companies can collect information on is consent from users, you know, permission. But it can't be the traditional terms of service, pages and pages of dense legal text, and you're just kind of mindlessly clicking yes. It has to be unambiguous, clear, and freely given. And that is why you are getting all these emails, perhaps from companies you didn't even know had your email. And that's kind of why they have to ask.
And this is, just to be clear, this is in the EU, not in the United States, right?
Right. But although it's a European law, it applies to companies that are collecting and processing data about EU residents and citizens. So that means like Facebook and Google, but probably also like even universities in the US, banks, even small businesses. And it's already kind of making an impact beyond Europe's borders, in part because other countries are adopting the same standards. So the EU is kind of trying to establish, like, hit the reset button, you know, on data collection, rampant data collection, and companies know that, you know, GDPR might not be the only thing they have to comply with.
So data collection, not a new issue. I used to cover it. You cover it. Have we in the United States gotten around to figuring out how to control data collection?
I don't think so. And I think that the, you know, the hearings are probably a good example of that. In Europe, privacy is a human right, and they approach it very differently than we do here. And partly because there hadn't been that many restrictions, companies also all share this data between each other to try to micro-target ads to you, customize things. So that means that, you know, if you kind of get one of these trackers like Ghostery, you can see that if you open up NewYorkTimes.com or Wired.com or pretty much any major page, you will see like 14 different trackers that you likely were not aware of.
Now, wasn't the Federal Trade Commission and more broadly the federal government, I believe under the Obama administration, at least tried taking on the issue of data privacy and an internet user bill of rights, particularly for this issue of terms and conditions and privacy? Where does all that stand today?
Well, historically, the FTC has chosen to address those problems, you know, if they run into it with behavioral remedies. So that usually means that companies end up settling for, you know, multi-million dollars and promising to change things in the future and let their books be audited. But as we can see with Cambridge Analytica, Facebook was already under an FTC consent decree, they're called, but basically a settlement. And, you know, it would seem like they are violating it. The FTC is investigating that right now. But I think that's why there's discussion currently about whether our privacy laws and antitrust laws are actually working to curb the dominant companies. For example, instead of requiring that Facebook fix data sharing between WhatsApp after the fact, regulators could say, hey, Facebook can't acquire WhatsApp. You could make kind of structural changes.
Is there any turning back in terms of the data trail that we've all left, whether it was, you know, directly or indirectly?
As far as erasing the trail, honestly, I can't see how that could possibly happen. I mean, one of the things that GDPR incorporates is online identifiers. And I think that's one thing that consumers might not know about. When companies are sharing that data between you, it could be pretty easy to re-identify you, even if they were trying to, you know, hide your identity. And that's the kind of trail that is going to be really hard slash impossible to erase.
Lots to pay attention to. Thank you so much for being with us today, Natasha.
Thanks for having me.
Natasha Tiku is a senior writer for Wired covering Silicon Valley.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.